All right, good afternoon. It's a shame you weren't in the car with me this morning as I was driving down, because I nailed this presentation this morning on my own. Now, this is my first TechEd talk. I'm a little bit nervous, but you know, please bear with me. I've been told I speak too fast, so if everybody's doing this, just please just tell me to calm down, take a breath, and we'll get through it. So this is me on this side. I'm Dean Robertson. I'm the technical director for a company called Mexia. We are predominantly known for our BizTalk skills, but we like to go to market saying we're the integration, enterprise integration specialists. So we obviously use the Microsoft application platform stack. Mexia is we're a gold partner in the application integration competency, and we're servicing clients from small education departments all the way up to federal government in the BizTalk on-premise integration technology stack. So the idea of the cloud coming now is a concern to us, because we want to understand what this means for our business and for our investment in our skill set. But our clients are also concerned. Like, you know, they're investing tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars in their integration on-premise integration platforms. And what does the cloud mean for them? So the takeaway for today will be, don't throw it away. Invest in it. Continue to invest in it, because it will take years. And all the cloud is doing is adding another dimension to your integration business problem, which is essentially what we should be keeping focus on. Integration solves a business problem. It's not a technology just to be played with for the sake of it. The man here is BizTalk Bill.
I want that too.
Is anybody here using BizTalk Server on-prem already? One, two. So would it be fair to say that we could spend a bit of time talking about BizTalk as a product and then talk about cloud integration? That'd be an interesting topic for people? Great. This is the man to talk about. Bill works for Mexia. He's a principal consultant. We're very lucky to have him. You don't realise how famous this man is until you walk through people at places like TechEd, and everyone goes, "Hey, Bill, hey, Bill." He's very well known. All right. Excuse me. We made a mistake with the title of today's talk. We probably should have put BizTalk in the title, but I thought crossing the Rubicon was more of an apt approach, but it meant that people who know BizTalk didn't know that this was a BizTalk session. Anyway, lesson learned. In 49 BC, a young general called Julius Caesar was summoned to Rome to face the Senate. He was a naughty boy, but he knew that he'd be facing certain death if he went on his own. Now, it was considered impolite to take your army when going to court, especially when you had to cross. Is there a laser on this? He was the general of the northern part of Italy up here, what we now know as northern Italy, but it used to be called Gaul. He was the general of this area, and there's a little river here called the Rubicon, and he was summoned to go all the way down to Rome. And he knew that if he took his army through other generals' territory, it'd be considered impolite, and he'd probably start a war. He decided that he was up for the fight, so he took his army, he marched across the river Rubicon, and it's rumoured, I wasn't there, that he said, "The die is cast, we're not going back." Meaning telling his troops and his team, "We're all in, we're going, we're crossing the river Rubicon, and we're going," and you know how it all ends. Something about bathing in milk and beautiful women and snakes and stuff. So the analogy for Microsoft is that they are obviously all in. That, you know, Microsoft have already crossed the river Rubicon. They've decided, they've invested already billions of dollars in their in the Azure data centers. Have you seen the videos about the Azure data centers that they're building? These containers and containers and containers of servers that are just doors welded shut. You know, can you imagine being in the meeting when Obama signed off on the check to build the first one? His hand to be shaking. $500 million, what are we doing? So Microsoft are in. So as a partner and users of Microsoft technology, we have to be in as well. So what does this mean for us who've invested our careers and our clients' money and our collective thought into the on-premise world? What does the cloud mean for us? So the journey for today's talk is, where are we now? We're going to do a quick overview of the on-premise technologies that Microsoft have in the application stack, BizTalk Server and Windows Server App Fabric. We're going to talk a little bit about the disadvantages of that model, but obviously there's a lot of maturity and a lot of advantages to that product. It's being used, BizTalk alone is being used by 10,000 companies around the world. Tier 1, 80% of the Fortune 500 are using BizTalk now, and their businesses depend on it. So they're not going to throw it away just because there's a new kid in town. So where are we going? For what does the cloud mean? Obviously, it's a different cost model. The OPEX model, the utility computing model. And then at the end of the talk, I'll come back. Bill's going to do the demos. I'll come back and we'll just talk about what does it mean for you and what's the next step, what's the first step you should take. So if you've been to any Microsoft talks before, you've probably seen this talk, you've probably seen this stack. 70s and probably before, it was before my time. Mainframe computing, it was essentially utility computing, but very capital intensive. You had to actually spend the millions of dollars to put a mainframe in your basement, and you had to invest the time in the developers and the business analysts. Very, very narrow, constrained, detailed business requirements process, because in order to get anything onto the mainframe, the guys that looked after it, I think Bill used to look after mainframes, you weren't allowed anywhere near it unless you knew exactly what it needed to do. The code had to be tested, very constrained. It wasn't like today where any kid in a laptop can build solutions. So the problem with that was that very capital intensive, and the business would complain that there's no flexibility in this model. So the whole client-server movement started because it meant companies could actually have, from a deployment point of view, actually take the computing to the user rather than a dumb terminal. You could actually start having some intelligence in your PCs. The whole Microsoft and Apple world started here with the personal computer. So with that increase in flexibility came a slight change in the way that software got developed. You've got mainframe down here that was all controlled. It was a box, and you know, weird people with small hands who smelled like cheese controlled it. They controlled everything that went into it. But with client-server environment, you had different teams. You had people building the client software and you had people building the server software. So that gave a little bit of flexibility, but the same organization still controlled the client and the server. So some loosening of the flexibility, but still relatively rigid. But that was still not enough because people didn't want to have to sit inside the organization in order to use the applications. So ASP, you know, the web-based access technology, probably the same server software, but now front-ended with a web client rather than a thick client. So again, that loosening, the business demanding the change, the flexibility to be able to expand access to this computing power out to the users, also brought with it a sort of mushrooming of, you know, the potential for crap software. So you can see what's happening. I should have actually put the diagram. As we go up, the flexibility is increasing, but as is the requirement for delivery and requirements management and quality of software. So it's not necessarily the delivery of the quality of the software depended less on the technology and more on the people who are writing it. Do you get that? But then people said, I don't want to have to use your UI to enter my 10,000 line items of orders. I want my system and my organization to call your system. So the whole evolution of SOA came, where still the same server technology or the same concept of the server, but not a UI front-ending that service code now. We're just going to expose it out as a federated service model, and you can invoke our business processes either remotely or securely. So again, SOA is a kind of a funny word. Some people love it, some people hate it. I can get Visual Studio now and build you an SOA by this afternoon because it's a WCF web service that I put in your production, and you're now SOA compliant. So again, with the increasing of the flexibility, you've now again removed the technology from the problem. And you've made the onus on the designer and the developer and the organizational methodologies and the process dependent on whether it was a quality solution or not. And now here we are at the cloud, and we've kind of done a full loop because now it's back to utility computing. The mainframe and the cloud are the same concept. You pay for cycles. You're paying for access. You don't deploy onto the box yourself. There's guys with small hands who smell like cheese who control it, and they're the guys now in Redmond running the data centers in Singapore and Europe and wherever the data centers are. But you're going to hurt yourself with the cloud. Like, it's infinitely flexible now. You can do whatever you want. Deploy up a web solution. If it's badly designed, you'll get charged for it. So the I guess my point is that in this march up to the cloud, the need for process and methodology and the solutions that satisfy business requirements is now more than ever as important. So the decision to go to the cloud should be a business decision, and there needs to be business and process methodology around it. Is that a long-winded explanation to say you need to think about going to the cloud? So has everyone seen this? This is Microsoft's vision. This was probably, every vendor's got a block diagram. At the bottom, we've got the infrastructure stack, you know, where the rubber hits the road or the bytes hit the tin. Microsoft have products on-premise and the vision for future cloud products to manage the infrastructure. So obviously, Hyper-V is the Hyper-V and all, you know, SCOM and all the deployment capabilities for PC management. It was all down at this level. Data management and databases, you know, reporting, transaction processing. Once you're off that level of infrastructure, how do we manage our data and what's the Microsoft products that will fit in this category, both on-premise and in the cloud? The middle tier, obviously controlling and constraining the business process and leveraging that data and infrastructure levels, and surfacing out, abstractions of your business up to your clients. So your clients just have to, consume an endpoint and magic will happen and they don't have to worry about it. And then obviously the application layers and the three-screen vision. So that's the vision for Microsoft. They want to have solid Gartner top quadrant solutions for every single cell in that matrix. And they've done it on premise. This is 10, 15, 20 years of Microsoft's best and brightest building reliable, stable, tested, proven products that have been out in the market for equivalently long. And we've found, the very fact that TechEd's so popular means that there's, somebody here in this room is probably a specialist in every single one of these things. We specialize, we at Mexia and Bill and I personally, focus just on that middle layer. And that, I think you'll agree, except for the App Fabric, which has only been out for a couple of releases, BizTalk Server and .NET are fantastically stable, well-used, well-understood technologies and products. And they're here and they're querying, they're solving problems today. And there's a tremendous amount of value embedded in that. It's not just the last version of the product. It's the products and the repeated learnings that have gone on for every release of the product. So today, Bill's going to give a demo and talk you through the features of App Fabric Server. Does everyone know what App Fabric Server is? Is it confusing that App Fabric Server and App Fabric Azure App Fabric is the same name? So I guess the vision is that the Windows Server App Fabric is an application container where you can deploy your services and your workflow, and it's meant to be the place where it's a managed environment for your .NET code to run. It's an infrastructure management environment, a deployment environment, and the vision will be that Windows Server App Fabric and Windows Azure App Fabric will hopefully eventually be merged into one sort of beautiful one singularity of a deployment architecture, and with a click of a drop-down box in your deployment package, you choose whether it runs on-premise or in the cloud, but it's the same code. At the moment, they're different code bases, but the vision is to merge them. And we're going to do a quick overview of BizTalk Server as a product. So given that there's only a couple of people here that are actually using BizTalk, it's a good opportunity just to remind everybody that it's a fantastic product that's stable and very complex, and there's not a patch on the middleware components that are coming, and it will take years for the new stuff that's coming to replicate its complexity. And I think that for me, that's set the scene. That today, I want you to, the takeaway from this is that just because the hype is ill cloud, on-prem is still a very compelling solution. Over to Bill.
Okay, so one of the things, if you started in .NET when .NET 3 and 3.5 came out and started looking at the WCF services and the workflow services. How many people are using WCF and workflow in their environment? So one of the things that caught me is that when I went off and did some training on WCF and WF is that they said, the WCF model has basically taken a lot of the plumbing out of the inside of your code. So if you can talk to remoting, you can go TCP, you can go HTTP. And you really don't have a lot of that in your code. But then in the next statement, they said, but if you want to host it outside of IIS, you need to write your own Windows service. And I was going, I'm not sure whether my developers are better at the plumbing inside of the code or writing Windows services. So one of the things that's come out of that is the Windows Server App Fabric. Again, as Dean mentioned, we've got that kind of disparate naming between the Windows Azure App Fabric and the Windows Server App Fabric. The only common point at the moment with the two is the caching service. We've got caching now in both Windows Azure App Fabric and Windows Server App Fabric. But the big thing for any of our on-premise applications is the fact that we've got the ability to host our WF and WCF services now on a management platform controlled from IIS but not run inside of IIS. And we'll see that we've got that hosting capabilities. We've also added things like the persistence store. If I did any of the stuff with IIS hosting or self-hosting of WCF or WF, I had to do all of that persistence setup, database connections, and all of that stuff myself. Now I can set up Windows Server App Fabric, set up the persistence, set up the monitoring, and the caching, and those, and then deploy my applications into those, and I don't have to go through that for every time I want to do something. So it gives me a stable platform to do that. It builds on top of all the tools we know, our Windows Server, IIS, the .NET 4 framework, all of those pieces, and gives us a set of management tools. So that's what we'll have a look at in a minute. Oh. So if we kind of break that down a little bit, what we've got now is our process that we're going to run our WF or WCF in. We've got an IIS manager to manage it, to start, stop, things like that. We have an application database that we may be accessing, but then we also have our persistent store and our monitoring database so that we can basically have a central point for all of our services to persist into and to where we can go look at the tracking information and things like that. And then our clients come in just like they would normally. Not really, it's not relevant where we are hosting it typically for our clients. So some of the other stuff that they've added as part of it is basically that startup performance. How many people have had to build pieces for their WCF services or ASP.NET websites that warm them up after they've deployed a new version of it? You have to go do some warm up. Otherwise, the first person that hits the service, about half the time will time out. The rest of the time, it's a really slow experience. So that's some of the stuff they've added in the Windows Server App Fabric, the ability to auto-start those components so that I don't have to worry about that every time. Also, the reliability. So basically, if I've got multiple servers that I've got configured in Windows Server App Fabric, I've got some failover capabilities and some reliability there. Bit of scale out also too, so I can share that persistence database. And when a service goes down, or a server goes down, comes back up, it can do that persistence out of the database. So some of the things, from a BizTalk person who's been doing BizTalk now for over 10 years, this is all the stuff that I was expecting, because it's what a lot of BizTalk provides us. So again, we've got the scalability. We've got ability to handle the persistence and all those things in Windows Server App Fabric. So let's go have a little bit of a look at App Fabric.
While Bill's getting his demo ready, if you want a live tweet, it's #COS310 is the session today. And please be kind.
Okay, there we go. So what I want to do is I've got the IIS manager open. If I go back here to just the list of sites, I've got my default website. I click on that. We'll notice that we've added a couple of icons across the top now for the Windows Server App Fabric. And that basically looks at our dashboard, our endpoints, and the services. So if we go into just the dashboard, what we'll see is that it's gathering up information about all the different services that are on our machine. I've got control here of how many days I want to look at. So if I go back to, say, 24 hours, that'll change how many things show up in the dashboard. We can then basically look here. We've got 8 active or idle services. We can double-click and go into that, look at those particular services. And this example that I'm using here is just the Windows Server App Fabric sample. So basically, you can load this up, deploy it into Windows Server App Fabric, and have a look at it. We'll see that this is, if we actually look down here at our order application, one of the things you will notice is if I go to content view, what we're actually running is that sales service is a workflow. It's not actually going through a WCF service to a workflow. It's actually calling directly into a Windows workflow. So let's hop back to the feature view, back into the dashboard, back into our service. And then if I pick out one of those services, I can basically go here and view the tracked events. And we can go down through there and see all the different workflow activity names that it ran. And if I go down here far enough, I'll find a new one. Let's towards the... Yeah, that's good. So there's all of that. I pick one of those. We can see that I've got some tracking information, and then I've also got some variables that are tracked. So how many people have written code and then once they got done with it needed to go back and put a bunch of logging stuff in so they could finally figure out what was happening in it? It's a classic example of things. So one of the things that App Fabric brings us is an easier way to do that. So if we go here and look, that service, we're recording a activity ID when it hits a particular workflow activity. If we go bring up Visual Studio here, and we look at the web config from this service, we'll see that we've got a tracking section now in our web config. And we can actually go in there, and if we scroll down, we can see, like on a process new order, we want to track the value of those three variables. So to turn that tracking on, basically what we can do is we can go into that web config, put a tracking profile in there, and start collecting that information. It's not something that we have to go back in the code, and we can actually set up those different levels of tracking from the web config. Much easier than going back in the code, going back through some testing once I put that in there, or have a chance that the code that I've added for testing is going to affect the results inside of there. So that's pretty much what we wanted to show on the Windows Server App Fabric, just a little bit of that, of how I look at the dashboard and some of the tracking information that's available. Flip back to that. So now we're moving on to just a little bit about BizTalk. So this is the classic BizTalk picture of everything that is incorporated in the BizTalk product. So we're looking at the messaging, the orchestration, our SOA, our B2B, our EAI, the rules engine. How many people have used the workflow rules? Not many people did because they weren't real easy to use, and they also made a major change, I think, between the 3.5 and the 4 that changed how they were. But the BizTalk rule engine is a full-blown rules engine. Business activity monitoring, RFID, the adapter packs. How many people have things like SAP, PeopleSoft, Oracle databases, Oracle e-business suite, things like that in your enterprise? That's the whole idea behind the adapter pack. That adapter pack is some WCF-based adapters that will allow you to talk to those applications either through BizTalk or through WCF. So that's one of the advantages of that. They've written that adapter pack so you can get to those systems. We'll have a bit of a look at the dev and deployment tools, and then we have the full management framework around BizTalk. So if you're using BizTalk, you'll have seen this, but BizTalk basically has a very mature model of how messages get in and out of BizTalk, and also the fact that we don't ever lose a message. So if a message fails processing at some point, we will get a copy of it in a suspended state that we can do something about. So if we break down the receive port side of things, we'll see that we've got all of our different adapters. We could have file, FTP, HTTP, any WCF type services, things like that. We could also receive those messages in an encrypted format, decrypted on the way in, unzip it. What's the nice thing about zipping up XML files? The size. It changes the size fairly aggressively, shall we say. So we can do that in our pipeline. So if we've got customers or trading partners that send us very large XML messages, we can zip them up for transport, unzip them when we process them. We also, how many people, when they build a process or a integration, use their customer schema all the way through their business process? Typically, we don't, because we don't have control of it. If they change it, we then have to change all of our business processes. One of the big advantages of BizTalk, on the way in, we can apply some mapping that we can map from the customer's format to our format. Then the message gets persisted on the message box, and it will get persisted on there no matter whether it failed or it worked. And we'll have a suspended message if it failed, a message waiting to process if it worked. Inside of our message, we have a lot of things. If I receive a pick up a file off the file system with a .NET file watcher, what information do I have about that file typically? I might have a little bit of information if I do a file info on that file when I'm picking it up. But one thing BizTalk does is it keeps lots of contextual information about the messages, where they came from, how they were picked up, when they were created, things like that. Also, if I've got a POP3 adapter, so I'm receiving messages off a email box, I got things like the to and the from, things like that. All of that context information is there. We can also handle, We can also handle multi-part messages. How many people use multi-part messages every day? Anybody sending email? So every time you put an attachment on an email, it's a multi-part message. It's one of the things BizTalk can handle. And we've got code, very simple code that we can write in BizTalk if we need to either create or consume those multiple parts. Our orchestration engine in BizTalk is what we use to put our business logic. And for me, the best analogy for the orchestration engine is programming in a flowchart. Because when we all did all of our programming courses, if we did programming courses, we would have done a flowchart. If you're like me, it was probably after you got the project done instead of before. But basically in BizTalk, it's dragging those shapes onto a design surface, configuring those, setting up the subscription. So BizTalk is a publish and subscribe, so I may have 0 orchestrations or I may have 100 orchestrations interested in that particular message. The message could be an address change from one of our other systems, so all of the other systems need to pick up and do something with that address change. Looking at the send side of things, looks very familiar to our receive side. We've got the message box. This time we're pulling the message off of the message box, and we're taking it out. We also have the ability now to apply another map on the way out. So if we've turned it into our internal format, we may want to turn it into our customer's format on the way out. We have that same capability this time on our send pipeline. Instead of decrypting the message or unzipping the message, we have the ability to zip it up or encrypt it on the way out. And then we've got our send adapters, so we could be sending it to Oracle, Oracle E-Business Suite, we could send it to SQL, any of those adapters, FTP, file, MSMQ, MQ series, a whole list of adapters. So once we've done that, if we think about the stuff that we saw in the tracking, for the App Fabric, we had pieces in there. BizTalk has taken that tracking to one level further. They've taken it to the point where we can actually talk to our business. The business can say, we need to track the customer, the state, all the items on the order, the size of the order, what time of day the order came in, how long it took to process the order. And we want to expose that to our business users. So we have the business activity monitoring tool that will allow us, through configuration, to capture that information and deliver it through either a portal that BizTalk supplies, or how many people use reporting services? So basically, we can deliver that same information because it's stored in a SQL database. We can deliver that same information across a reporting service report. So we're going to go have a quick look at something like this. What we've got is, I'll go into Visual Studio real quick and just give you an idea.
Switch the screen.
That was your job.
Oh, was it? Sorry, I didn't get the memo.
So I've reduced the size of this because I really just want to get the flavor of what's happening in this, not exactly what's happening. So basically, we've got a message coming in. We're writing out some data to a request response. So that first shape at the top means that we're getting a message in. We're doing some processing on it, and we're sending a response. Then we're continuing on making some decisions about approval before we actually put some data in a SharePoint document library and also archive the original message in a SharePoint document library. So this is a very simple example. It's a PO processing. So I'm going to do an approval based on the amount. In this particular case, I'm also using the fact that I've got a business rules engine, so I could actually use that to decide so that when that approval amount changed, I don't have to go back into my orchestration, change some values, redeploy, retest, things like that. So what we have is a fairly simple orchestration. We've got a simple test client that basically lets us put a order. You'll see we've got it deployed as a, this is a just a simple web page, but we're calling off, if we look in IIS, we've got a service here that's a WCF service. And it's just got it's an SVC. So we've exposed our orchestration as a WCF service, so anybody in our organization can consume that service. So if we go into our client, we'll put some interesting in here, and we'll just do demo, and we'll put $300, and we'll submit. And once everything fires up, we should get a response directly back, whether it's been approved or denied. And we did. We got it. It was submitted, and it was the request was approved.
Just want to go back to the orchestration and just quickly point that out.
What's that?
Just go back to the orchestration, and I'll use my little laser pointer here. So what Bill said is you publish the orchestration as a WCF receive location. It's indistinguishable to the client that it's a BizTalk service behind the scenes. That's one point. The second is that it actually came in through that port. It was received in. Bill called off to a rules engine, which said for $300, is that above or below the approval threshold? The value of the response, the approval status, was set to approved. And the message was, this is a construct shape, the response message was constructed and then sent back out on the same port. Now, because those two are in the same receive shape, that's a request response stateless call. So that what executed there was that the message came in through there, and then once the client got its receipt, the rest of the orchestration continued to process. So the beauty of BizTalk over other WCF services is that services, unless you actually programmatically execute them asynchronously, BizTalk will do that for you. That's the point I wanted to make.
So one of the things we're going to look at now is the business activity monitoring side of things. So if we go in here, I've got a we've got a report exposed through SQL reporting services in SharePoint. And we can see that at 216, coming from customer demo, there was a PO for $300 that was approved. So if I go back to the client real quick and just drop another one in and make it for $30,000. The client gets a rejection back. Go back into the report. Do another refresh. And we've got that rejection in there. So we're pretty much instantly getting that information in our business activity reporting that our business users can be able to see and have a look at. Again, if we had more information about the customer in there and using the BAM portal or a more customized report, we could be able to use this to find out where an order for our customer's at. So you'll notice we've also got a received, a response, and an uploaded column. That's actually when those events happened in the orchestration. So if between our response and our upload, there's a bit of work that needs to be done, we could see that that time difference was a bit more. So we could see that, okay, it's been through the first step. And you'll notice that we never get to invoiced on the rejected one. because the PO's been rejected, it never gets to an invoice.
And this is just touching the surface of what BAM can do. You can get proper performance point analytics.
One of the other things we've done is we've got just a SharePoint document library where all of our purchase orders, so we've got one at 216 and 218, so we're just saving off the XML document that was submitted for the purchase order. And then we've got the invoices that are created. We're also saving those off in a SharePoint document library. We could apply any kind of SharePoint workflow to those particular documents. So that's pretty much the on-premise demo. Let's switch back to the slides.
All right, back to me. So we just wanted to do that quick lap of on-premise technology to demonstrate how robust the tooling is and the product is. I mean, everything that we showed you then, the demos we built in less than an hour or 2 hours, we've obviously done some tweaking and testing, but it's really easy.
And changing.
I wanted to make a change this morning and he overruled me. The purpose of the demos was just to say on-premise integration technologies are here and they're still solving business problems. So what the rest of the talk now will be showing how we're going to be reusing those assets from the cloud so that you walk away with a sense of confidence that your investment in on-premise integration is actually still money well spent. So the summary of the on-premise approach, the pros are that the products are well understood. I mean, everybody here in the room has... most people here at TechEd have written some .NET code, are interested in technology, understand how to use Visual Studio. You don't scare anybody if you say, I'm a specialist in WCF services. You go to any recruitment agency, I need a .NET or a WCF developer, and you'll be inundated with well-priced technology resources. And there's lots and lots of blog and technical reference implementations, so it's not like we're using the on-premise technology as cutting edge. It's well established. But the problem is, and this is the value proposition of the cloud, one of the value propositions of the cloud, is that particularly with BizTalk, it can require high upfront capital expenditure, because like all on-premise products, you have to buy the license, and BizTalk runs on SQL Server. So a highly available multi-headed BizTalk instance that does automatic scale out requires multiple BizTalk servers, and then you've got redundant infrastructure in your data recovery environment, which is not being used. So although there's some licensing issues around servers that are turned off, and we can talk to you about that, if you're a bank or if you're a big organization doing hundreds of thousands of messages per day and it cannot fail, your upfront CapEx expense can be a little bit high. But again, depending on your risk profile and your actual requirements, the money might be a drop in the bucket. But it's definitely sometimes a reason why people choose not to use the products because of the licensing. It also requires infrastructure expertise. Now, Azure is a platform as a service, so you can do a deployment from a wizard and not actually understand how to do load balance configuration, Active Directory configuration, all the services, infrastructure, having to talk to the guy who runs the SAN about requesting, synchronous. What did we need the other week? Atomic synchronous writes between SANs across data centers. I mean, you can spend weeks arguing with the infrastructure guys about what you need in order to solve a business problem. So your business problem feels like it doesn't get solved for weeks or sometimes months after you started the project because you actually have to spend time working on the infrastructure first. It requires infrastructure redundancy if your business processes are fluctuating. You might have an end of year tax processing obligation. For the rest of the year, your CPU sits at 2%, but for the month before the financial year finishes, everything explodes. Your entire infrastructure has to be able to cater for that peak event. So you require redundancy in your infrastructure just to cater for that peak load. And it's not elastic dynamically, which is kind of the same point. So, where are we going? We're moving to the cloud-based application platform, PaaS, Platform as a Service. The Azure web role and worker role and some of the features around Azure are here and now and in production, and obviously there's customers using that now, and it's quite mature already. But the middleware components that are coming... Sorry, that's my phone, it's ringing. I turned it back on to see if anyone was tweeting, and now it's ringing.
Just leave it.
There are middleware components. It's actually going to be called Azure Middleware, and it's coming. I'm not NDA on it. I don't know the ins and outs of everything that's coming. But the idea is that the capabilities of BizTalk and Azure Windows Server App Fabric are going to be replicated in the cloud. And it won't happen overnight. It's the Pantene platform. But it will happen. But whether you use routing or FTP file receive locations or message transformations, you'll all be able to do that in the cloud. and you won't have to worry about your infrastructure, and you'll get automatic scale out elasticity, pay-per-use type models. So what we're going to do now is have a quick chat about where we're heading. Bill's going to jump back on and do some more demos, and then I'll come back and we'll finish up the session just with where should you start, and if you're interested in this, what's your next step? So as I mentioned at the start, this is the on-premise stack, and Microsoft have a mature, stable offering for every product in that cell. On this side, they have the equivalent on the cloud. Now, Windows Azure, as I said, from the infrastructure level, Azure is there, and it's been out for several years, and it's becoming a well-understood technology platform. SQL Azure is also out. It's the equivalent of SQL Server, and if you've read the documentation or actually used it, it's actually a byte-for-byte. It is actually SQL Server running in the cloud. It's not a different code base. There are some limitations, but they're generally being the features around SQL, it's obviously quite a big product, are being rolled out. Now, this is the layer we're obviously interested in playing in, the middleware layers. The Windows Azure platform, the only thing in production at the moment is the relay services, which is what we're going to demo today, and caching, and access control services for security. And obviously, it's the same .NET framework. But this box is going to receive a lot of investment over the next few years, and eventually they'll get to the on-premise capability for BizTalk and Fabric Server. But this is the area where I think a Lego approach, where some on-prem and some web-based Azure solutions in a hybrid model is going to make the most sense over the next few years. I just talked about it then. So the goal is platform equivalence, and from the middleware point of view, Windows Server, App Fabric, BizTalk, and the Azure platform, the App Fabric, Windows Azure App Fabric, as I understand it, that will become one big happy family, and it will be irrelevant to you where the code gets deployed. It will be a configuration option about where your applications run. So Bill is going to talk about it.
So, how many people have attended either attended a session here or looked into the service bus that's part of the Windows Azure App Fabric? So have you actually deployed things in it? So basically what they've done is they've built, for lack of a better term, a relay service for us. So basically what we've got is we create a endpoint from our BizTalk server or our App Fabric WCF service in the App Fabric service bus, and then our clients, instead of having to come to through our firewall, they make a connection out into the Azure App Fabric service bus through authentication services and things like that. We can ensure we get the right people connected to our service. Then basically they'll send a message up. The message gets sent down to our BizTalk server. BizTalk server or the App Fabric does the processing, sends a response message back, and that gets sent down to the client. So basically what we've done, if we're in an organization and we have lots of fun getting holes put in the firewall so that we can get inbound traffic and things like that, this is one of the ways that we can solve that. We can put that in the App Fabric service bus and basically have our on-premise resources be able to be consumed either from other services that might be running in Azure, so we may have a website that's running in Azure that needs to send stuff to the on-premise, or we might have customers that need to send us data, trading partner type information and stuff. We can have that come through the service bus and down into our enterprise, and we can then send them also a response back out that same way. So all of that goes through the App Fabric service bus. So for BizTalk with feature pack, they did a feature pack for BizTalk Server 2010 that added the BizTalk Server App Fabric Connect. And what that did is it set on top of the Azure App Fabric SDK and basically added capabilities to BizTalk to allow BizTalk to then be able to publish its endpoints in the cloud. We could already do, as soon as we put the App Fabric SDK onto our Windows server, we could use it from our WCF services, because basically it added a set of bindings. So what they did with BizTalk is they produced a tool that made it a lot easier to do this same thing in BizTalk. So let's go have a look how we do that. So,
I'm going to switch this.
Nope,
wrong one. That's one.
So what we've got here is we've got that same orchestration. And what we did to publish it as a WCF service originally, we're going to do the same thing. We're just going to check a few different boxes. So we're going to go in here and we're going to run the BizTalk WCF service publishing wizard. And basically that comes up. It asks us, what do we want to do? We want to publish as a basic HTTP. We want to enable on-premise metadata. So we want our developers inside of our organization to discover our service. We could also have it create a receive location in our BizTalk. I'm going to leave that alone. We're going to go next. And basically, this is one of the new pieces they've added. Do I want to add a service bus endpoint for this service? So I'm going to go ahead and check that. And basically, it's then asking me the standard question of whether I want to publish an orchestration as a web service or a schema. We're going to publish our orchestration. We then browse off to the location of our orchestration. And what it does from that, it actually opens up the orchestration and finds out the message types coming in and out. And then finds the ports. So there's our receive PO port. It then asks me for a target namespace. And basically I'm going to use TechEd Australia 2011 PO. Then I also want a location, and let me just make sure I got the right location. So put the location in there. So that's where it's going to create the on-premise version of the web service or WCF service. I'll overwrite the existing location. And for the on-premise side of it, I'm going to give it anonymous access so that I can basically do some testing and stuff without supplying credentials. Now, here's the new stuff. So basically here I need to tell it what relay binding I want to use. So I'm going to use the basic HTTP relay binding. I'm going to use HTTP just so I don't have any issues with certificates and things like that at the moment. Then I have to tell it the Azure service bus name that I've got. So in my case it's Bill Mexia. And if I'll just hop real quick over to this, and this is basically the Azure Management Portal. And basically I've got Service Bus, and I've got my Mexia connection, and then that's my Service Bus namespace that I'm specifying there. And then I can enable the endpoint for discovery via the Atom feed on Azure, and then also enable metadata exchange in the cloud. So if I need to point my external customers to that site, I can do that. A little bit trick with this, I will go to the end of this, and we had a little trouble at first with this, is that normally the service name ends in .svc. For the Azure metadata one, it ends in svc underscore mex. And it insists on making it HTTPS also. Just one thing to be aware of. Then we're going to go next. Now what I've got to do is I've got to give it some information so that when I publish something into my namespace on the Azure Service Bus, they know it's me. So the issuer name is owner, and then I get to go grab this nice long key and put that in there. And then I can also decide if I want to use some client authentication. For this demo, I'm going to turn the client authentication off, but it allows me to do things like shared secrets. So I could send the customer, the owner, and a set of keys for this service. And then they basically would put that in their call, and that would authenticate. Some people have brought up a topic about, if I put this endpoint in the web, what keeps somebody from doing a denial of service attack on it? That whole idea behind putting that, going ahead and securing that, using either a shared key, or we can use some of the other components of the access control services. We could federate our own domain up there and have credentials that they need to supply to use that service. And that would prevent that denial of service. So we'll go next. This basically tells us what it's going to do. And it's basically off creating that WCF service. So one of the things currently with publishing those service bus bindings is that until I run the service once and bring that service up on my local machine, it doesn't actually establish the connection in Azure. So what I'll have to do the first time is I'll go back to the client that we had a minute ago, and basically I'll run that demonstration again. And I'll do,
You're going direct there? Are you going direct to?
I'm firing it up. Okay, so I successfully sent through that. What I can do now is I can then switch over and decide to use, still on premise, because you notice the website here, I'm still local host. I can still go now, I can go from my local host up through service bus and back. So let's try that. And I'll call local, I'll call the customer local to Azure. So basically that's submitted. We'll quickly go over here to our reports because we added a bit to the reporting so that we can actually see it's the endpoint that was used. So that first one I did a minute ago went to my machine, the demo machine, the local host. The next one, that message actually came in from Bill Mexia, servicebuswindows.net. That's the one I hit. We can then do the next step. And I've got another web service that's published up there, and it's called, so if you've got a phone or if you've got a laptop open, see if you can hit purchasingdemo.cloudapp.net.
I've got three training kits for the first three names we see on the report.
So if you do that, you'll basically, we'll go here and I'll do Azure to BizTalk. And give it an amount, and that's basically, I can't use the direct because this site's actually hosted in Azure, so it has no connection to it. Yes? Purchase demos, hold on. Purchasingdemo.cloudapp.net.
I set up a bit.ly address for it, but I didn't bring it with me. I'm sorry.
So what we can do now is we can go back here to our reporting services, hit refresh.
Alice. So,
Alice.
Who's Alice?
Bob. Bob and Alice.
You've
so
Alice?
Far.
You gave me these.
So we've got a couple people that have hit that service.
Who's Bob and Alice? Quick. I'll give them to you afterwards.
So basically, what we've done is we've basically taken something that we have on premise, we've published it to the service bus, and people are able to hit it from outside. So if people have issues with infrastructure, publishing externally facing things out of their infrastructure, an ideal way to do that. So I think it's switch back to the slides. Yours.
Right. So one of the really powerful concepts there is the App Fabric Connect bits aren't specific to BizTalk. You can actually use those relay bindings on any WCF service that you have now in your organization. And as Bill said, you might have services that you want to expose out to your customers, but your infrastructure guys are not going to let you punch inbound firewall holes. So that's a fantastic way and a cheap way to get access to your internal services that are already tested, that are already representative of the business value. You don't go and have to rewrite your services and deploy them up into the cloud. Just install those relay bindings, expose those services, and you're in business. The other good thing with that App Fabric Connect, the BizTalk adapter kit is that the WCF adapters over Oracle and SAP also use those relay bindings. So you can actually now expose your SAP system to clients that you trust, to invoke, put messages into your SAP or any of the systems that have got the adapters for them out of the box. So it's not just BizTalk, it's extending your on-premise system capabilities to the cloud and doing it securely. So we've talked about on-premise capabilities. We've shown how you can extend those on-premise capabilities to the cloud, leverage the OPEX model for your web tiers. It doesn't have to be an online ordering app. If you have that seasonal demand that I was talking about, and you don't necessarily want to have your on-premise infrastructure able to handle all those loads in real time, you can have the cloud and use the cloud storage to capture that information, and then just having BizTalk dequeue that information from the cloud, and scaling down your BizTalk infrastructure to being just a worker process that runs at 90% utilization, and getting maximum efficiency out of your on-premise CapEx licensing that you've had to incur, and using your OPEX model for the cloud for your Elastic processing requirements. So it's that hybrid model, and we're going to talk about that. This is the the Azure Customer Advisory Team, the CAT team out of Redmond. These guys published only a couple of weeks ago the reference architecture for hybrid integration. So this is a working example. You can download the code. I didn't bother bringing it today for working because there's just far too many moving parts. But essentially what they've done is, on this side of the screen is a BizTalk server solution that has its on-premise capabilities with all of its out-of-the-box adapters, XML, EDI documents, flat files, representative, you might have emails coming in, zipped files, using the best bits of BizTalk for doing the things that can't be done in the cloud yet. BizTalk pushes them up onto, debatches the messages and pushes them up onto Azure to be processed via the service bus. So it's really a hybrid model and a best of both worlds. So in more detail, that's essentially what I just said. Sorry, I slipped ahead. There are bits of BizTalk that aren't being replicated with the Azure middleware services that are coming. Business activity management is coming in the new stuff, but it's not available yet. So if you wanted to do a hybrid integration platform, but you wanted to access that power of BAM, now remember the report we're showing you was 5% of BAM's capability, you can have a really rich reporting solution hosted in SharePoint and Performance Point services reporting off your cubes that are built for you by BAM, and all of your Azure-based processing calling back into your BAM APIs via the Azure service bus. You can host all your business rules and your tracking and event data collection all on-site, all being managed by the service bus. So that the things that you don't want to have tracking data on-prem and some tracking data in Azure, and then having to try and build a reporting solution and munge those data sets, you can ensure that you've actually got the best of breed application doing the right role. And in Azure, they're using the Azure for what it should be, the elastic processing loads, large files. Imagine this is an insurance company with hundreds of thousands of files coming in overnight via flat file. BizTalk's taking that file, chunking them up, pushing them up to the service bus, and then based on the elastic processing requirements of how big those files get on a nightly basis, debatching them using SQL, Azure, and worker roles, and processing information, putting them on queues, sharding the data out, putting them into a data warehouse. One night it might be 10,000 rows, but at a certain time of the year it might be 10,000 or millions of rows on a nightly or weekly basis. So you're really using that elastic compute capability, and meaning that your on-prem capabilities are sitting there just chugging along, doing its thing at 90% utilization. So, has anyone read Crossing the Chasm by Geoffrey Moore? It's a great book. If you're running your own business and you're actually trying to sell technology solutions to business, brilliant explanation of why some ventures fail and some ventures succeed. This is a diagram off Wikipedia, because we got told when doing tech ed presentations not to use any images that are potentially copyright. So that's obviously in the open commons. The stages of all technology go through these phases. Now, hopefully you've seen this before. The innovators phase is when the guys, the really, really early adopters, and this would have been Azure 2 years ago, the guys who got the bits downloaded were prepared to tolerate some of the bugs. The innovators, the forgiving of the features. The guys that are playing with this stuff are the guys that want to work with the product teams and validate the technology. They're excited by it. They see the vision. They want to be involved. These are generally the MVPs of the community. Then you get the early adopters. These are generally the people that see the commercial appeal. They're not just the geeks that want to play with it. these are the early adopters, the businesses that see that it's a game-changing technology. Businesses like Green Button, who have taken the whole 3D rendering, and you know, you can actually render a massive three-dimensional model that used to take days or hours in seconds now by scaling out, you know, as many as your services for that, you know, that parallel processing. The early adopters are the businesses that use the new platform, the new technology, to differentiate themselves in the market. But there's a few requirements. You've got to be a visionary. You've got to be a small enough company that you don't have to argue with the bean counters and say, this is what we want to depend our business on. So it's not going to be the category of the market that Microsoft go and buy a big boat with, as if they need any more. So innovators and early adopters, these aren't the people that are going to define the success of the platform. Azure as a product and as a market opportunity is only going to be, it's already a success, don't get me wrong, but when it becomes the default option is when Azure will become, it will become the reason, it's why aren't you using Azure rather than why are you using Azure. The early majority are pragmatists. Now these aren't my definitions, these are definitions from the Crossing the Chasm book. They're focused on business value. They don't care. The CIO couldn't care less. If he has to spend $200,000 on infrastructure versus $20 a day, he might care, but you need to put it in a business context for him or her. They don't want to be the visionaries. They don't care if you're the enterprise architect running to your CIO going, you've got to get on this. This is hot. That's this domain. The early majority, which is where the vast majority of the market live, it's going to be a few years. Now, this specifically from the Azure middleware capability, in a few years, that will be the Azure middleware users. When you don't install BizTalk, the default will be to use the Azure middleware capabilities. But until we get there, the best approach is a hybrid approach. So although the marketing hype is 95% cloud, 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 those of us who have a vested interest in solving business problems need to realize that we need to use a Lego approach. So the cloud's here, we've crossed the Rubicon, we're on our way. It's relatively immature compared to the on-premise stack, but BizTalk's mature. There's another release coming, we've heard that from Microsoft, that the die is cast. Thanks very much.
Keep going. Just a few other slides.
Oh, so. Okay.
So,
any questions?
Yes. Yep.
No, it does it all for you.
It does it all for you. So some of it depends on the version of SQL you've got. If you have standard edition of SQL in front of it, you'll have to do scheduled aggregations. If you have enterprise edition, you can set up the real-time aggregation. So your users could be hitting those cubes and watching that data come in all through the days. Also, don't forget to fill out your evaluations. They're giving away 10 touch mouse per day. So fill in your evaluations. And what else?
They've added all this.
That was the Tech Quest game. How many people have played the game with the phones? Nah. We were sitting across from some guys just an hour or so ago that were comparing which ones each one of them had, and they'd come up with an interesting way. They were able to bring up the barcode on their phone and shoot it with another phone. So they were trying to get the most of those. So, and this is the last session, so I'm not sure Schedule Builder is going to be of any help to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.